This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 23rd, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 348. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and my guest on the Big Deal feature, April Hutchinson, a Canadian champion powerlifter on her battle to keep women's sport for women, which brought her to the BC legislature during the spring session. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. June 23rd is International Olympic Day, the anniversary of the 1894 founding of the International Olympic Committee in Paris. And Paris is also where the Olympics open July 26th. At the 2021 Games in Tokyo, New Zealand weightlifter Laurel Hubbard made history as the first transgender woman to compete in the Olympics. Since then, World Aquatics and World Athletics have enacted policies to limit or restrict athletes born male from competing in women's divisions. My guest, joining me from London, Ontario, is April Hutchinson, a Canadian champion powerlifter and advocate for rules to ban biological male athletes from women's sports. Hutchinson was at the BC legislature in Victoria in April when Conservative leader John Rustad tabled the Fairness in Women's and Girls' Sports Bill, but Premier David Eby's NDP majority blocked the private member's bill before it could be debated. Hutchinson is not alone. Tennis legend Martina Navratilova and Alberta track and field coach Linda Blade, who was a guest on this podcast, have also campaigned to protect women's sport. Powerlifting was not your first sport. You had many other sports before finding powerlifting. You have an athletic family, athletic background in Ontario. Talk about your progression in sport as well as finding a place in women's sport.
Yeah, so I grew up, yeah, like you said, in a very athletic family. My father got me into power skating at the age of five. I remember him waking me up at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, sending me off to power skating. My brother, who's 5 years older than me, he was always on the hockey team. So I kind of look up to my brother. So whatever sport my brother was playing, I wanted to play that sport too. And whatever sport that was, my father was always the coach of it. So I really had no choice in the matter. I was always just playing, you know, either baseball or hockey. And he always, like, whatever season it was, if it was summertime, I was playing baseball. If it was wintertime, I was playing ringette or hockey. And even in grade school, I was always the number one track athlete. I always wanted to bring home that red ribbon. And I was always the fastest girl at track. Always on the basketball team. So sports was always, in my life. And whatever sport I did play, I always remember I always wanted to be number one. There was never second place in my mind. I always wanted to be number one. I'd have to say I kind of grew up with, I wouldn't say a hard-ass parent like my dad, but he always kind of drove me to be that number one person too, right? Having a brother, I remember in track and field at school, they would always line me up to compete against the boys because I was always the fastest girl. So they would make me compete against the fastest boy. They would trade their lunch money for entertainment reasons to have me cheat or to race against the boys, right? So, I just always loved sports. And, I think they got me through my tough times growing up, right? So it was always quite a blessing in my life.
What was the low point?
I got into sports at the age of five. And when I was actually only a year after that, I was actually sexually abused by my neighbor at the age of six. So I talk about this a lot when I go tour around. I was just in British Columbia last week. And during my speech, I touch on this and I talk about being sexually abused. And after I was sexually abused, it was a very uncomfortable time for me. I actually even talk about how I wanted to become like a little boy. And, because I thought, well, if I'm a little boy, then men won't touch me ever again. And, I remember having my little boy haircut. I wore little boy's clothes. I wore track suits. I hung out with my brother and all his friends. I mean, and I think back and I think, well, if I was like that now, who knows what would have happened to me? You know, I could be put on puberty blockers and, you know, so, you know, I think about all the kids now that could have, like, you know, sexual trauma or unresolved psychological things happening in their life. And so anyways, moving forward, when I hit puberty, I still played sports, but I mean, puberty was such a hard time for me because I was developing and I was so, I mean, ask any teenager, it's such an awkward time for them, right? So I actually found alcohol. You know, I mean, back then, I feel like alcohol was kind of in every household, right? So I remember stealing alcohol from my dad's liquor cabinet. And the first time I tasted it, I thought, wow, this is such a great feeling. It took away all my uncomfortable feelings, all my awkwardness. I could cope on life terms, right? So I unfortunately liked it a little too much and I got addicted to it. So by the time I was 18, I was actually a full-fledged alcoholic by that time. So, I mean, I was still playing sports, but I was taking alcohol with me to school. I was hiding in my lockers. I was taking it with me. I remember going rollerblading and putting a six-pack of beer in my backpack. So it was very much a part of my life.
How you were able to see that light to get better and to live a normal life.
At 18, I realized I was an alcoholic. And then, you know, I was very much a functioning alcoholic. I drank for 20 years after that. And then basically, my doctor said, look, you have 2 years to live, April. You can't keep drinking this way. And I found no way out. I could not quit drinking by myself. I tried so many times. So I actually ended up trying to take my own life by overdosing on booze and drugs. Obviously, I woke up in the ICU unit on a breathing tube. And when I woke up, I basically had to make that decision, you know, am I going to live or am I going to die? So I ended up putting myself into rehab. And when I came out 28 days later, the day after, I literally started powerlifting. Now, this was just a couple of months before COVID hit. So thank God, because I would surely be dead if I didn't get sober before COVID. I would have drank myself to death. So instead, I trained my butt off in my friend's garage because everything was closed down. There was no gyms. There was no competitions. All I knew was that, you know what? I got to keep myself alive. I got to give myself some type of purpose. I need something to wake up to every day and just go and train. So I trained five times a week, 2 hours a day. Powerlifting. I had a friend who knew how to powerlift, and I would just do that like almost every day. And when I came out in 2021, when the competitions opened, I went to nationals, and that was my first competition, which is very like that doesn't happen. It usually that's not the process. That was a very rare thing. And I got gold medal, and then I went right to North Americans, which I got gold medal again, and I got the North American deadlift record. And then I went to Worlds in October 2022.
Decades ago, women were not welcome in
Yeah.
powerlifting. It was seen as not something that was feminine.
All right.
A sport that also has had, weightlifting in general has gained a bad reputation over the last several years in the Olympics because of doping, abusing their bodies essentially to try to, get that extra ounce of strength to beat the competitor to win the gold medal. The sport is now facing a new challenge, a new controversy of men competing in the women's division, biological men competing in the women's division. Where did you first encounter this?
When I was training in 2020, I met a friend online on Facebook and we would just chit chat by the name of Ann Andress. And so I just assumed by the name and by the way this person looked that it was a female. And they were also powerlifting in the female category, taking gold medals. And they told me that they were a biological male, they were born male. And I was like, excuse me? And I said, well, you've been lifting in the female. And they're like, oh no, I transitioned after 20. And I said, well, how far do you expect to go? And I said, you've been taking medals away from women. And Anne said, well, I want to go to Worlds. Like, I want to go as far as I can. And I said, well, that's completely unfair. You're cheating. And Anne didn't like that answer. So he blocked and deleted me. So I have not since talked to Anne. And so that's what basically started my whole crusade. That was, and so I sat with that for about 2 weeks, and I thought to myself, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't even tell my boyfriend. I was just like, well, I can't sit with this. This is not good. And I knew, you know what? I was going to take some slack for it. I knew people might not listen to me. And that's exactly basically what happened. I wrote my federation a two-page letter outlining the harms mentally and physically to women if they make us compete against men. And they ignored. They didn't even get back to me saying, thank you for your email, April. There was silence. So I took to social media, silence again. And then I reached out to Dr. Linda Blade and I got some assistance from her. And I went on a couple shows. I went on Tucker Carlson, Piers Morgan. And that's when I called and a biological male on TV, and they suspended me from Team Canada for 2 years. And so ever since then, I've literally obviously been speaking out about men and women's sports. I mean, but since then, it's just exploded. So, and not just powerlifting, but in other sports as well. But since I did speak up, the good news is I did have the policy changed. So that was a great part of it. Because before it was literally any man could walk into the Canadian Powerlifting Union. Like you could walk in tomorrow and self-ID as a woman and take records and then go back to being a man the next day. But now, at a national and international level, any man or say a transgender athlete has to meet requirements such as 2.4 nanomoles testosterone monitoring. They have to meet that requirement for a year prior to competing and be continuously monitored for a period of 4 years. And they also have to, now here's the clincher, they also have to submit psychological records with a diagnosis by a doctor as well. So, because a lot of these people, for example, Anne, like what they call the male grifters, especially in cycling in the States, people are just going in there saying, hey, I self-ID, I'm going to take some prize money, and then I'm going to walk right out. So a lot of these people, they do need actual diagnosis of gender dysphoria or a psychological diagnosis, right? So people might think, oh, that's not a great policy, but it actually works. And now Anne is not competing because Anne doesn't have the diagnosis.
Putting your career on the line has paid off. And there has been action taken, even though you've been shunned by various people in the sport. That must have some satisfaction for you to, try to protect that women's division. You're not alone.
Oh yeah, no, and seriously, I would say like 90% of people have been behind me. Too many people focused on the suspension, and you know, because people were angry, they were riled up, and I think I took it so graciously because I said, hey guys, like. And I mean, I'm just a positive person to begin with. And I said, you know what? I got suspended, but to think, what if I didn't voice my concern? First of all, yes, the policy would never have changed, right? And I think people lose sight about that because I didn't really blow that up too much. I said, yeah, I should never have been suspended, but we changed the policy, right? And that's why I'm really big on telling people, use your voice, speak up, like, come on, like, don't just sit there, like. And be a keyboard warrior or like say stuff from behind the scenes. You really got to speak up because that's how change happens, like honestly. And also, like, I love the expression when life gives you lemons, make lemonade, because my suspension got me worldwide attention. And that's kind of what I needed to get my voice out there. And then plus I made my merchandise line, which I'm not out here to make money because actually all the money goes towards me going out to British Columbia. And it goes every time someone wears this t-shirt, it sends a message, right? To keep female sports female. And I get so many people come up to me and give me high fives, like fathers of daughters that are like, yeah, I love your message. Like, you know, it's great. So it's catching on.
Keep female sports female was also the theme of the Conservative Party of BC's bill that leader
Yeah.
John Wistad tabled in the British Columbia legislature during the spring session. And something very rare happened. You were there in the public gallery to watch this, but it's very rare that, well, it's very rare that a private member's bill gets passed, but it's even rarer
that a private member's bill doesn't make it past stage one, and it didn't make it past stage one. The NDP majority wouldn't even let it be on the order paper, which meant that it was essentially rejected. What was going through your mind as you watched this unfold before you?
So I was there, obviously, so was Dr. Linda Blade, and so was 15 female athletes. So, I mean, it was a very emotional day. It was hard not to tear up, right? I mean, first of all, I have the utmost respect. I love John. He is such a genuine guy who just cares about women and fairness. And so it's funny watching it. The NDP didn't even give him the time of day. It's like they were on their cell phones just looking off. And it was so disrespectful, first of all, I thought. But yeah, so, but I thought the way that he did it was very smart, because he made them all stand up and on record show who were the ones that were denying little girls safe sports or safe sports and safety, right? And fairness and safety. So I thought that was a really smart thing to do because he knew it was going to get shot down. But I am so confident that I will be back there in October when they table it. So I told him I have 100% faith that it's going to pass. And so, I mean, I was just so blessed to be there as a guest. And I mean, yeah, the whole message was when they did that, I don't know if you saw the video as well, that they did like a little promo video, and the whole theme of it was bodies compete in sports, not identities. And I really love that. That's kind of like my coined expression. And no, it was a wonderful day. Like it was, I found it very positive. Like I said, you know, big changes I think are coming. And yeah, it was just, I know I'll be back. I have a feeling that it's going to get tabled. It's just, again, we keep using that expression, common sense. It's not even common sense. It's just safety, right? We all want safety, especially for little girls, right? And whether it's sports now, it's coming down even to our locker rooms. We don't want men in our little girls' like locker rooms, right? Or spaces. Like, come on. Like, it's just, yeah. So it hits all different areas. So
one of those NDP members who voted against it being allowed on the order paper was Kelly Patton, who advocates for transgender. She called it anti-trans and called the whole movement essentially to protect women in sports, called it anti-trans.
I have no respect for Kelly, first of all. Kelly, about 5 minutes after we left that day, was already acting like a high school bully. And I honestly, I was just in awe how she was behaving as an MLA, because she was already taking screenshots of some tweets that I had put out about Bill C-16. And she was actually slandering me and Linda Blade. And I was like, wow, this is the behavior. And so, and it's not anti-trans, it's pro-woman, it's pro-fairness. And it is astounding that, and I see this a lot, actually, it's astounding how a woman will virtue signal and throw another woman under the bus. And all I have to say is shame, shame, shame on any woman that does not protect women and girls' safety and fairness. You are literally helping to erase women's sports. And that's all I have to say to Kelly.
Should there be a transgender division if there are enough athletes who are transgender who want to compete? Should they have their own division?
What John has proposed, it's wonderful because it doesn't discriminate against anyone. It's actually a female-only category, a male-only category, and it has a co-ed. So that way, people, like, for example, I know lots of women, like, say there's Kelly, for example, that want to support, you know, say, men lifting or competing with women, then that's fine. Then you can go compete in the co-ed area with the men that want to compete with women. So trans women, AKA men, they can go into the co-ed league. So Kelly or any other women that want to support that can go into the co-ed. But if you're born male, that's why there should always be a male only and a female only. And that, see what's happening, I'm sure you understand. I mean, a lot of people don't see this happening in the world, is that it's funny how they call it discrimination against trans people. It's discrimination against women when you take women's bathrooms away. When you take away our sports and force us to compete against men, that is discrimination against women. So you're taking away our options. when you force that upon us. But here, you're actually giving options by having a male, a female, and a co-ed. I'm sure you've been into a restaurant where the women's, I mean, I have, there's only two establishments here in my city where I've been into a restaurant and they've taken away the women's bathrooms. And I said, well, hey, where's the women's bathroom? I see it's universal. So you should have an option, a male, a female, and a universal for those people that do not feel comfortable entering a bathroom with a man. You know what I mean? Same thing with sports. That's all we've ever asked for is a separate category. We've tried it. Transgender athletes do not want that. We did it with Swim Canada. No one, like, no, trans athletes did not show up. So what can you do, right?
Why do you think that is, that they wouldn't be satisfied with their own division?
Well, because they can't dominate. They can't be number one. That's the whole key, is they want to be number one. Otherwise, so for Anne, in my powerlifting, Anne would be number 6,000 in the men's category. Anne is number one in the world right now in the women's category. So Anne, for example, Anne's starting deadlift is 515, whereas the average woman's is 240. So just do the math there. So I'm just saying, like, so why would you go into another category and be by yourself when you can literally dominate, win prize money? And so that's why it's not so appealing when you're just going to be by yourself. But I've said this all along, Bob, where, I mean, I'm friends with, I don't know if you know Buck Angel, there's a friends with a couple transgenders. And I said, if that was me, I would totally, again, I'm a very positive person, I would actually be a role model and start my own federation. You could totally be like, hey, let's make our own federation. Be a positive role model. Think of all the kids growing up. Like, you could totally be someone they could look up to. You know what I mean? Like, but, you know, but that's just me.
There are safety issues in team sports when a biological male plays on a women's team against another women's team. Safety issues that have been discussed in sports like rugby and hockey. Is there a safety risk and perhaps a health risk too if a male, biological male, is allowed to compete in an individual sport against women, that if that male is allowed to compete and allowed to excel and succeed and get on the podium, would there be pressure on the biological women in the women's sport to cut corners, perhaps cheat, to over-exercise, maybe dope in order to stay competitive with the hope of getting on the podium?
That's exactly what I put in my letter to my federation. I'm glad you brought that up, because when I wrote the letter to the Canadian Powerlifting Union, I stressed the mental harms. So high level, like, I'd be considered a high level elite athlete, right? So I've been on Team Canada 3 times now. And also, I mean, Linda Blade can contest to this too. Like, high level athletes have a higher depression rate. We also have a higher level, like, suicide rate. We're also very hard on ourselves. You know, when we don't, like, I went to Worlds for the first time, I got 4th place. I was so depressed after getting 4th, like, for how long? Like, you know what I mean? So that's, we put so much pressure on ourselves. So there's the mental strain right there, right? How do you think we feel knowing going into a competition, or even like little girls going to their first competition, knowing they're set up to fail because they're going to lose to a boy, or me knowing that, hey, I'm going to lose to Anne, just no doubt, right? Why would I even compete anymore? I would just kind of pack up my bags and go, well, I'm just going to lose. So there's the mental part of it. And exactly, overtraining, we could, you know, strain ligaments, muscles. We could overtrain, which means we don't have our recovery time. And yes, I'm in a tested federation. I'm not allowed to take anything. So, like, not even, like, say if I go through menopause, I'm not even allowed to take hormones to help me through my menopausal era, like, part of my life. Whereas Anne, so I can compete, I think, in November, say if I go to nationals. Like, so women are getting tested for doping, but then we have to compete against men? Like, that makes no sense. Like, literally we're getting drug tested, but these men are, we're competing against men. Like, it's just, it makes no sense. Of course it crosses our minds to take banned substances or, you know, dope, for sure.
What did the next few months look for you for training and competition? And how do you balance that with your day job? You work as a bylaw officer.
So when I wake up every day, my job is number one. What's the word? Decompartmentalize. I just keep things in sections, basically. So I wake up, I keep everything separate. So I don't like to blur the lines at all. I wake up, I do my job, I keep everything separate. Like, I obviously don't talk about what I'm doing with my political views at work. I mean, when I'm done my job, I train at the gym. And that's about it. I still train about 3 to 4 times a week. And I do my advocacy. I got so busy that I've actually hired like a PR team to take over my like posting and all my social media stuff. So that's been like a huge relief. I'm hoping to have like a nice relaxing summer because I can start competing again in November. And I don't think my first competition will be until February, which will be nationals. So I can actually qualify for Team Canada again.
Thanks again for joining us on the podcast. April Hutchinson, Canadian champion powerlifter, competes internationally as well as a outspoken, tireless advocate for women and girls in sport, biological women and girls in sport. News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Taiwan ranks 8th on world competitiveness list. According to Switzerland's International Institute for Management Development, the top 10 countries were Singapore, Switzerland, Denmark, Ireland, Hong Kong, Sweden, United Arab Emirates, Taiwan, Netherlands, and Norway. Despite falling 2 spots compared to last year, Taiwan still ranked higher than the U.S., China, and Japan. Canada was 19th. In Kyoto news, foreign visitors to Japan topped 3 million for third straight month in May. The Japan National Tourism Organization attributed the strong tourist arrivals to China's holiday season and an increased number of flights and ships coming from East Asia. The number of visitors from more than a dozen countries and regions, including South Korea and the United States, reached record highs for the month, a total of 14.6 million year to date. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Canadian judge extended Singapore court role months before quitting Hong Kong's top court, citing family time. Beverly McLaughlin was the third overseas judge on the city's apex court to announce their departure within a week, as she cited the need to spend more time with her family. Her resignation came 140 days after she extended a 3-year tenure on a Singaporean commercial court. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, Oregon's top health official meddled in press release at behest of alcohol industry lobbyists. On April 3rd, a top deputy to Oregon Health Authority Director Dr. Sejal Hathi gave 4 representatives of the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association, the Oregon Wine Council, and other industry groups a draft copy of the release. Lobbyists wanted additions to the press release to make it, quote, more balanced, end quote. Excessive drinking is a widespread problem in Oregon, costing the state $5 billion in lost productivity and health consequences a year. Alcohol is the state's 3rd largest source of revenue, and the industry is one of the state's most powerful lobbies. In Crosscut, scientists seek ways to protect Pacific Northwest rainforests from wildfires. Old-growth forests of the West Coast store about 5 gigatons of carbon, but researchers are still learning how climate change will affect vegetation. Western Canada may not yet have experienced significantly more wildfires in coastal rainforests. In a study in the journal Nature, a team of scientists couldn't find a rising trend of coastal burns in British Columbia between 1900 and 2021. But, they wrote, hotter weather and easterly, quote, fire winds could set the coast up for some alarming disasters. And in the Breaker.News, read stories such as, who is behind the EBNDP's dark money ad campaign? And, double dipping. ex-Mayor Cote received big paychecks from Metro Van and New West last year. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Canada's Taiwanese community. June 29th is Taiwan-Canada Cultural Exchange Day in British Columbia. More than 100,000 Taiwanese call Canada home, and Vancouver's Lower Mainland is home to most Taiwanese Canadians. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 23rd, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 23rd of June in 1940, RCMP Sergeant Henry Larson set out from Vancouver aboard the St. Rock to begin the first west-to-east navigation of the Northwest Passage? The St. Rock is now the feature attraction at Vancouver's Maritime Museum. And June 23rd is also the National Day of Remembrance for Victims of Terrorism. It's the anniversary of 1985's bombing of Air India Flight 182 that killed 329 people. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News on Twitter as news happens. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.